And I like, by the way, that you're very concise with your lessons. It's very clear, and you have a great story behind it all.
Well, told me I was on a time limit, so I can't expand too much.
All right, I'll take the
sitting here for 4 hours.
I'll take the blame anytime.
It took me 50 years, so I could possibly talk 50 years about it.
Well, I like it. It's wisdom for sure. Hello and welcome to our podcast, 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, where we dispense wisdom, not just information, not mere facts, to an audience of future leader at any age around the globe. In other words, we will be talking to interesting people about their interesting experiences. This podcast is sponsored by PDF, the Professional Development Forum, and PDF helps up-and-coming professionals accelerate their performance in the modern workplace. My name is Siebe van der Zee, and I'm your host. I'm originally from the Netherlands, and I'm currently living in the state of Arizona in the United States, also known as the Dutchman in the desert. My company is involved in executive search and performance coaching. And oh yeah, in my career, I've had the opportunity to live in 4 countries on 3 continents. I hope you will enjoy this program. Our guest today is the commanding officer of the F-16 fighter jet detachment of the Royal Netherlands Air Force in Tucson, Arizona, Lieutenant Colonel Joost Luisterburg. Welcome, Lieutenant Colonel. Welcome, Nikki.
Thank you so much, Siebe, for the invite.
Well, I'm very happy that you're here, and I definitely want to thank you for your service. It's quite impressive, and we're truly honored to have you as a guest in our podcast. I just used the official name Joost Luisterburg, but you go with the name Nikki, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Your background is very impressive. A senior strategic leader, teacher, diplomat with over 30 years of experience across a wide range of international and joint missions, including 11 combat deployments. Lieutenant Colonel Joost Luisterburg, also known as Nikki, was recently featured in a book named Mission F-16, published in the Netherlands, hopefully soon in other countries as well, about the activities of F-16 fighter pilots while they were operating in Eastern Europe in the 1990s, after the fall of the Soviet Union in former Yugoslavia and in the Balkans, followed by deployments and missions in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. It's quite a track record you have. As commander of the F-16 detachment from the Royal Netherlands Air Force, Nikki has a strong focus on improving performance while working together and keeping people motivated. Nikki is also a well-known keynote speaker and a military and technical advisor for various large movie and TV productions. Wow, that's quite a list. Again, welcome, Nikki. We are very happy that you're joining us.
Happy to be here.
I'm curious, before we get into your 10 lessons, I refer to you as Lieutenant Colonel, but actually, as you mentioned, you prefer that I call you Nikki. And I'm very curious, where did Nikki come from, and how does that represent you?
Well, Nikki is my tactical call sign, like Tom Cruise in the movie Top Gun is called Maverick, and his other pilots are, or his backseater is Goose, and some of his fellow pilots are Iceman. Every pilot in the tactical air force, at least in the Western world, has a tactical call sign. From what I've been told, that stems from a very long time ago when people were referred during flight by their first name. And a lot of people at that time in the Netherlands were called Jan or Pete, or they had the same name. Maybe in the US it was all John or Jim or Bill. So if you basically tell John to do something, you might have 4 Johns doing the same thing. So at that point, they started to give people their unique names that were, so since in our own, you know, culture, we can just know how many names or duplicates are out there. So that's how we control names. And then names are basically picked by either a funny stint to your last name or a physical appearance that might be unique to you or a situation that happened to you. So we in our Air Force, we have a nose, somebody with a giant nose. We have the chin. We had twins one time flying F-16s, and one of them was called Twin and the other one was Clone. I know people in the US that their last name is Cool and their tactical is Not So. We have a We have a Gladys whose last name is Knight. So we have a Gladys Knight. And I am Nikki. When I was a brand new lieutenant joining my very first operational squadron in Leeuward in the Netherlands, we had a big party before we deployed on our very first combat deployment to Bosnia for the night flight. And we rented a bunch of go-karts and we rented a bunch of hay bales and we built a racetrack. That got boring really quickly. So we built a big tunnel and set it ablaze. And I was going to drive to the tunnel that was on fire, and halfway I got stuck and burned kind of half of my face.
Oh, wow.
So it was really quick to, the squadron was really quick to decide to name me either Evil from Evel Knievel or Nikki from Nikki Lauda. Well, Evil is not that known in the Netherlands. And Nikki Lauda, Formula race car driver that got burned all over his face during a big accident in the 80s, is very well known. So I ended up being Nikki from that point on.
Maybe a good choice, because Nikki Lauda was very, very impressive, right, as a race car driver.
Very impressive as a race car driver, very impressive after his career as a race car driver, building his own airline and obviously bringing Mercedes to the top of Formula One racing, where they've been in the last 4 years since Nikki has been their advisor. So wow. Yes, big shoes to fill.
Well, it's wonderful. And again, I know you as Nikki, but your track record is, as I mentioned, is quite impressive. Before we get into the 10 lessons that you provided, I'm just curious with your background, your experience and dealing in very serious situations in multiple countries, combat situations, Nikki, is there something that you would call the greatest lesson that you have learned?
Wow. Well, I don't know. I think a lot of lessons are important. It's difficult to rank them. Obviously, you asked me to write down 10 lessons or 10 things I think a leader should do. And I've done that. I didn't rank them in a specific order. When I left the weapons school as an instructor, my going away present said, at the bottom of it, to be effective. And I think that's probably one of the big lessons. Whatever you do as a leader, whatever you do as a person or somebody in an organization, you always have to make sure that what you do is effective. You have to realize what you want to achieve and then go about the right way to achieving that. And that could be in a lot of different ways. So never stop learning. Always ask the why question. That's part of being effective. Know why you are doing stuff. Know why, what your bigger goals are. But also for us, I found out as a teacher, teaching people how to learn to fly F-16s, how to learn to fly fighters. And then we have lots of procedures and techniques, but being able to explain why we do things in a certain order and stuff creates better understanding for our students, for in businesses, better understandings for employees, I guess, why you do things a certain way. And I think that will lead you to being effective. And I think that's probably the most important thing. So be effective and always ask the why question and always be able to explain the why question as a leader.
Explain the why question. I like that too. The lessons that we're going to cover, obviously, I would say apply to life in general, but yeah. I'm sure a lot of it came from your experience as a fighter jet pilot. And if I look at the first lesson, it seems there are only two intrinsic motivators in life, love or fear. What do you mean with that?
Yeah, well, that's not something that I came up myself. Obviously, a lot of lessons we get taught as well. And this came from one of my mentors, Nose, one of our former leaders that I truly respect. He's a CEO of a big telecom company now in the Netherlands. But he basically told me that once, and I started looking at decisions that people all over the world take, politicians, just, you know, anybody from high or low in any kind of organization. And it appears to be pretty true that we either are driven by negative thoughts or positive feelings. And that's kind of like the love fear thing. So, and I think it's most important that you are driven by positive influences, which is, you know, being taking decisions based on love. And I think that way you can never go wrong. Love for what you do in my case, maybe love for my country, or not maybe, love for my country. And those are very broad things, but also very minor decisions can be based on like focusing on negative consequences or focusing on positive consequences. And I think it kind of relates a little bit more to that. I'm not saying you shouldn't be taking decisions that scare you a little bit, which will broaden your horizon. And I think one of my later lessons as well is be a risk taker. So that it's not that kind of fear. It's more like all kinds of negative feelings or being afraid of consequences. If you're afraid of the consequences, probably it's not the right decision to take. If you're afraid of like negative publicity, maybe you should take a different decision. If publicity is a big important part of your business life or personal life, things like that, I think it's more focused on that. But yeah, those two drivers, I think if you look at the core of decision making, are always one of those two things.
I like it. It's of course, when I think of being a fighter pilot, the issue of fear, to me, that's a daily occurrence. But perhaps after 30 years, you look at that a little differently.
Yeah, you do. There's obviously fear. And I mean, flying a single engine jet over enemy territory, being shot at in bigger conflicts and stuff, being able to lose your life, you'll always have that. I don't know if it's fear. Fear is more of a mind-numbing, what is it, experience. And I wouldn't call it fear, but there's tension. And I think you need a certain amount of tension to do your job well. In any job, you need a certain amount of tension to do your job well. So it's the same for us. But fear is very negative. So if you're truly afraid to do this job, then this job is not for you. And we see that with people as well that step into this world, that they may find out like this is not for me. You know, if you're scared, that's different. That's different from healthy tension.
Yeah, I hear you. Thank you. Lesson number two, we touched on it a little bit with your greatest lesson, but be effective. All your decisions as a leader should be with that in mind, being effective.
Yeah, I already talked to that a little bit, I guess. Yep. So the why question, I think, is part of that. Never stop learning. Have relevant knowledge is super important to be effective and be able to that people follow you or are willing to follow you.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And since we covered already, lesson number three, the most important part of communication is the receiving, listening part.
Yeah, that took me a while to learn. As a young, aggressive captain, I was more transmitting than receiving most of the time. And as I got older and hopefully a little wiser, I did realize that receiving part is perhaps the most important part of any kind of communication. Because if you and I talk, I know what I know. So it's not important to transmit that, you know. I don't gain anything by that. Hopefully you will gain something by that, by listening. Yeah. So when I talk to you, the most important thing that I can do is listen to you and listen with empathy. Not just listen and hear your words, but try to understand what you're saying. And this is a different communication that we're having. But if I look at our politicians or the politicians in the US in the last whatever X amount of years, the listeners can fill it in. I only see a lot of diversity and people just digging in their heels, just saying like, this is what I believe is true. And we do that on both sides of the spectrum. And we only see people getting more and more extreme in their thoughts, while I think the majority of the people like to live in the middle and do that. But the less we listen to each other, the less effective we're going to be. You know, if I'm flying and we're not on the right frequency, in the same frequency, I can say whatever I want, but if nobody's going to hear me, then I'm not going to be effective at all, because I'm only transmitting, nobody's listening. And then only being on the right frequency is that first step, but being on the right frequency is not enough. If you're too busy to listen, if you're too engrossed in your own part of the world because you're just too busy with what you're doing, you're also not going to hear what I have to say, which might be very important. In our life, it's super important. I might try to save your life by telling you to do something or trying to explain something to you while we're flying. And we see that. So that listening and trying to understand what that other person is saying, which comes with empathy, I think is the most important part of communication. And we seem to have lost that in the world, I would say. It's not just here in the US in politics. It's the same in the Netherlands. It's the same anywhere else in Europe I see. we tend to just transmit and transmit, trying to get our point across. But if people are not listening, if you're not listening to other people, you're never going to learn, you're never going to grow.
I really like this point, and I'm thinking about it, that in your profession as a fighter pilot, which is, I would say, a cutthroat type of exercise, coming from you, the need for listening and empathy. Yes, I would easily agree. I think many people would when it comes to politicians. They have a one-track mind most of the time, whichever track that may be. But definitely, it would make sense. And it's good to hear this coming from you in your profession with your experience, the importance of empathy and the importance of listening. So I appreciate you mentioned that. Lesson number four, have self-confidence. Know what you can and cannot do.
Yeah, I think that's important for every leader. It's definitely important for fighter pilots in general, even the young fighter pilots. You do have to know your own limitations, because if you don't, things can become dangerous, or guess what? They'll be ineffective. If you say you'll be able to do something and you're not able to do that, then obviously you're not going to achieve your goals. But as a leader, I think it's super important to exude confidence. And you can't exude confidence without experience. So we do see, we elect, or we choose our more experienced people to be leaders in the military. We don't pick the youngest guy to lead the squadron, obviously. But when you take that position, it is super important, obviously, to know what your own limitations are as well, to not exceed those, but also basically speak with authority, be courageous, and know your limitations, but also don't be afraid. I think I said it before, but you also need to know that there are certain risks you sometimes will have to take in your decisions, if it's leading your company or stuff, but you do need to know the risk reward scale, and it obviously needs to be the reward needs to be bigger than the risk. And that, all of that stuff comes with confidence and taking decisions throughout your career or life.
Yeah, measuring risk. How do you determine that the risk is too high? And I'm thinking especially of your professional career. Those are split second decisions many times.
Yes. So that all depends on the mission, right? For us, when I think about this, and I think it's probably the same if you equate that to business decisions or maybe personal decisions. But if I'm basically talking from myself being a pilot, in peacetime, there are certain things that I probably wouldn't do because it's too dangerous. What if I end up losing my life over a peacetime mission, trying to drop a bomb lower than I would want to or should have to, or what is considered safe? There are always margins, obviously, to the numbers that we use. So how far should I press those margins, or shouldn't I press those margins? Well, in peacetime, the correct answer is I shouldn't press those numbers. In wartime, it could be a whole different story. Mm-hmm. If it's a target that's not super important, that I can also attack tomorrow and I don't make certain numbers, I could be like, you know what, I'm just not going to drop this weapon. I'll try again tomorrow if I'm out of gas. But if me dropping that weapon, or if me not dropping that weapon in a certain situation causes 10 coalition soldiers on the ground to die because I'm not taking out the enemy that's almost overrunning their compound, then that risk is probably a good risk to take, because as long as I know what the margins are, and maybe if I go to the extreme, if Russia is invading Poland and going through Poland and going through Germany, and now are on the eastern border of the Netherlands, and I'm the last line of defense, I'm the last F-16 standing, there's nobody behind me anymore, and I'm the difference between speaking Russian for the rest of our lives in the Netherlands versus speaking Dutch, then my life might be worth putting on the line as a bargaining chip and doing as much as I can do to protect our country. So it all depends on what situation you are in and which risks you are willing to take or should be maybe taking to be effective again.
In your profession, obviously, you're talking about very extreme situations that most people luckily never have to deal with.
Yeah, life and death situations. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you've been doing this for over 30 years. So I understand how you sort of evaluate that, but it is heavy duty. But the lesson, you know, as far as taking a risk or at least deciding how to take the risk, that's something that can happen in daily life as well. But in your situation, it's on the extreme, but very helpful. Looking at the next lesson number five, and I like, by the way, that you're very concise with your lessons. It's very clear, and you have a great story behind it all.
Well, you told me I was on a time limit, so I can't spend too much.
All right, I'll take the...
We'd be sitting here for 4 hours.
I'll take the blame anytime.
It took me 50 years, so I could possibly talk 50 years about it.
Well, I like it. It's wisdom, for sure. Be responsible. Lesson number 5.
Yeah, own up to what you do. Yeah, being responsible, take accountability. It kind of goes hand in hand, I guess. For us, when we go into debriefs, we're extremely honest. So we own up to mistakes right away. Everything gets recorded anyway, what we do. So it's very difficult to hide your mistakes. And so the first thing you do, the first way to lose credibility is basically not owning up to your mistakes in a debrief. Because everybody will see it. And then if you only talk about mistakes of other people, but don't even point out your own mistakes that people can easily see on your tapes, then they'll walk out of the debrief and lose respect for you and all of that. And that's the last thing you want, obviously, as a leader. So I think it's super important to take accountability with yourself. It's being an example, setting the example. And everybody makes mistakes, even after 30 plus years of flying fighters and being alive for 52 years. I'm still not perfect. I'm always striving for perfection. But if I make a mistake, I try to own up to it. And I'm definitely not upset if people point out my mistakes. It's never personal. You see it as a growing experience. Besides that, I think as a leader, it's also important to give other people tasks that you possibly could do easier yourself, but mm-hmm. they need to learn as well. So give them something to be accountable mm-hmm. for and hold them accountable to the product that they are delivering as well. And if you hold yourself accountable to what you deliver, then people will have no issues being held accountable equally.
It sounds like you're saying it's something you can learn, or a person can learn.
Yes.
Being responsible. It's not something that you're born with. It's something that you can really learn and apply.
I think it's quite the opposite. I think we all go through a phase, at least I did, and all my friends did, going through the adolescence phase, where you're quite irresponsible. And now I'm after lots of lessons learned and making lots of dumb decisions, also in my professional life. And now being a leader, I do realize I can't do the things anymore that I maybe did when I was in my early 20s. It's not so far that it's not at the point where you can get away with it, but it's just setting the wrong example. It was bad then, it would be worse now. So, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. And again, as a leader with your team, it's of course important that everyone acts that way by being responsible, yes. etc.
Which doesn't mean that there cannot be anything like different standards based on experience. We have that based on experience. Our younger pilots have higher limitations to what they are allowed to do in training and combat than our more experienced pilots. In bad weather, they can fly lower to the ground trying to land based on experience. So it's not an equal world necessarily. And people need to understand that as well. Somebody that has been, for instance, in our world flying for 30 years has different rules they have to abide than my young students that I'm training. They can't do the things that me and my instructors are doing for another 500 hours possibly, you know, or even more than that. And that is just based on ability. So, and that's also very important that people need to realize, especially younger people need to realize, like, oh, why is he allowed to do this mm-hmm. and I'm not? Well, it comes with ability, and ability comes with experience, and experience comes with time. So people need to, I see a lot of people, especially the YouTube generation, we see this a lot of sports, like, ooh, especially extreme sports. I'm a part-time skydiver, and I'm an instructor and a coach as well. And I see a lot of people that want to progress really fast because they see stuff, but they don't know what kind of experience lies behind what they see on YouTube, for instance, and how many test jumps and knowledge went into a certain, if you want to call it, stunt or, yeah. or performance. And they're like, oh, I'm going to do this as well. And they end up killing themselves. So I think that is super important as well to realize.
And I think it applies, let's say, also in corporate life, where you hopefully get promoted, get more responsibilities, you learn over time, and responsibilities, in a way, expand as you become a manager, director, whatever it may be in terms of title in an organization. Good point. Lesson number six, sacrifice. And again, you keep it to the point, sacrifice. I know there's a story.
Yeah, well, I mean, sacrifice. I mean, being in the military, obviously, you can be confronted with, unfortunately, we see that with brothers in arms paying the ultimate sacrifice for what they believe in.
Yeah.
If you read the book Legacy, it's basically about the All Blacks, the rugby team of New Zealand, who have called Legacy of being top performers, of being champions. They basically say, find something you would die for and give your life to it. And they basically say, find a passion. And for them, it's rugby. And I'm not saying they're willing to die for playing rugby, but they basically put everything into it to give everything they got to be the best they can be. Champions do extra. We basically say in the fighter pilot business, is we keep on striving for excellence. Even if a mission is perfect, you know, or near perfect, we will find the little things. And the debrief, I say, is always the same amount. And if everything goes really well, I'll start hammering ourselves and you on the little things. Because then if everything goes great, the big things go great, then we can perfect the little things. And that's important. So always strive to be that better person. And that comes with a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of sacrifice. And it's more like that. I think in a corporate world, I don't think you should put your life on the line. Hopefully the risks and the rewards are not that great that people should die for a little bit of profit. In my world, it's a little bit different, obviously. And we have people that gave their life for, you know, to achieve a certain goal and to achieve their mission. And that is paying the ultimate sacrifice, I guess. But sacrifice is all those little things, I guess. It's also a lot of sacrifice is unseen, I guess. Work hard, even when people are not watching, and that's a little bit of that borders on integrity. But I think that's super important as well.
I look at it sometimes, again, in corporate life, that when people have a real passion for an industry or for a specific job, and yes, it doesn't compare to sacrificing like in your trade.
No, but they might sacrifice family life, personal time, you know, their work 16 hours a day. People don't see that. They're like, oh, look at this millionaire. I want to be that as well. But they don't see the sacrifice people put into their jobs to get that way. I don't think anything big comes from taking it easy. It comes from hard work.
No, I like it. Lesson number seven, language, rituals. Leaders are storytellers.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like a way to inspire your team. In fighter pilots, we have our own language. Ritual-wise, it's super important that we create certain rituals and that creates a strong bond and a team. Every Friday, for instance, we have to, being from the Netherlands, our squadron has to wear these name tags that go over this, and I wear an orange T-shirt. And if you don't do that and you show up wearing the wrong T-shirt, you basically pay a beer fine and you put a crate of beer on a list. And at the end of the month, we end up having a small get together and talking stories and consuming the beer of the people who made little mistakes. And not just that T-shirt. If other people make mistakes in certain ways, you end up putting your name on there. Those are certain rituals that create a strong team. We have our youngest pilots. They are responsible for keeping the kitchen in order and keeping the fridge stocked as well. And all of the cans need to be facing with the label forward and not the little barcode or something. So every can is standing in the same way. And that's just a little bit of like eye for perfection, but also creates a team. And then as a leader, I think it's also important, and not only as a leader, but as every team member, it borders a little bit with the sacrifice part and creating the team. It says never be afraid to do the little things, you know. So if I'm bored and I'm standing in the kitchen, clean up the kitchen yourself. Don't be too big to clean up or to put cans in the fridge if you see that the fridge is running on empty. And then also putting the labels forward, you know, be an example, do the right thing. If people see it or don't see it, it doesn't matter. That's a little bit of that's not a little bit, that's a lot of integrity, that's a lot of authenticity, and that's a lot of character, and all of that creates all of those things.
I like it a lot. For our viewers, once we're on YouTube with this podcast, as you know, I'm wearing an orange tie, and as we both know, orange is the national color for the Netherlands.
correct.
So for this interview, I thought it would be appropriate to wear an orange tie because you and I are talking about these things. And
yeah,
right. It's part of that. And it's part of the ritual in a way, in that sense.
And rituals in the same language that creates a bond, that create, then you feel you're part of a group and that, and you need that group. You need that strong team in the military, but I think also in business to be successful, to be effective. Back to lesson number one, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Lesson number eight, be honest. I don't think anybody will disagree with that, but I'm very curious about the story that you attach to being honest.
Oh man, there's a ton of stories to being honest. I already hinted towards it in the briefing. You know, it's really difficult to lie about things you've done if everything that we do gets taped and recorded and being able to be played back on a big screen. But as I said, it creates integrity, it creates authenticity. I already mentioned it in the previous point that we talked about a little bit in lesson seven. I think being honest in my context was more to being honest to your team, explain them what's going on. You know, a lot of people or a lot of leaders I see have difficulty bringing bad news. And I think that's a really bad thing. I think people understand way more than we think as leaders how the world works, how business works, how the business of the Air Force work, or what kind of things go on in leading a big corporation or something. So if you're honest to your employees, especially when you have to share bad news,
yeah,
they're not going to like it, but they'll understand. And you lying about stuff, for one, it will always come out. And then they will have zero respect for you if they found out you knew in advance already. If you have to lay off 25% of the people in your business, and you basically tell them everything is okay, even though you know this is going to happen, and then 2 weeks later the news breaks, those people are not going to like you any better. If you would have told them a week prior, or 2 weeks prior, or as soon as you knew, and explained them why this is going to happen, they're also not going to be happy. But at least they hear exactly why you're taking those decisions as a leader. And I think that is super important. They will not like you. They might even dislike you, but hopefully they will respect you if you have a good story. And therefore you have to be honest. Don't take any shortcuts there, because it will always bite you in the butt.
And there is, again, that level of empathy, right? If you have bad news, you say, well, I don't really want to let this person know because they're not going to like it. But to your point, if you're straightforward, and I've learned this from people as well, if you have bad news, mention the news, say the words, and then, depending on what it is, have a few seconds where you wait for the response of that individual or the group of people that you're talking to, just to see, give them a few seconds to respond. And I've seen that when people were fired in companies.
Yeah. And then see if you can, you know, find a positive somewhere, or if you're able to do something for those people. And also then don't give them any false promises, you know, like, oh, but I'll make sure that you'll get a job in this company that I know. And if you can't deliver on that promise, that's also not being honest. I mean, you can tell them like you'll do your best, or you'll talk to somebody, that's fine.
Yeah.
But don't cut them loose saying all kinds of things that you're not going to deliver on. You know, all of those things we see way too often. I see that in my business where people get promised certain things that end up not happening. And that creates such a big feeling of distrust with those people. And you'll never regain that trust. You know, you'll never get those people back. You have lost them forever. And that's, I think, super important in business and in my job in being in the military. Trust is super important, but also just in life, losing friends, family that don't believe you anymore. It's just not worth it.
Well said. Well said.
Ineffective.
Absolutely. Lesson number nine, Nikki, be a shit screen. I'm just reading your list, right?
Yeah, be a shit screen. That's a really big one. That's really, shit rolls downhill, right? That's gravity for you. And it's super important as a leader not to sidestep shit that rolls downhill. It doesn't mean that you can deliver some of that shit that you're catching as a leader further downhill if people in your organization are responsible for creating that shit. But you should never, as a leader, you know, sidestep and let people above you just tear your employees a new asshole. I don't know if I can say all these words, but well,
you just did.
I'm in the military and I just did, and I'm not gonna do over. But that's super important. It creates a lot of, if you do that as a leader, you are basically lost for life. They will never trust you again. They'll never respect you again. And that's super important. I have a great example of this. So we have a Solo and F-16 demo. It's the Solo display, who basically shows off the capabilities of the F-16 at air shows and big events and stuff. And we had a reunion of a squadron in Leeuwarden where the Solo display was being flown over the runway, and the runway is quite far from where the squadron is. So mm-hmm. The squadron commander said to the display pilot, well, why don't you just move your display line to the taxi track, which is really close to our building, and that way everybody can enjoy the Solo demonstration way better. But then that Solo flight, because of that, a lot of the parts of the Solo flights ended up being over parts of the city of Leeuwarden, where, and then subsequently a number of noise complaints obviously rained upon the base that landed immediately at the base commander's office. And he came storming to the squadron and started yelling at the display pilot, saying, how can you do this? Why didn't you fly over the runway like you're supposed to do? Why did you move the display line to the taxi track? And now I have all these noise complaints from the people of the city that I have to have a good bond with to be able to do our jobs and everything. And I know people, and I know other leaders that would have just stood there and said nothing, but the squadron commander that told the display pilot, like, hey, why don't you move the display line so everybody can see you, immediately raised his hand and said, sir, that was me. I asked them to do that. And that deflated the whole situation. The display pilot was not to blame at that point, you know, even though he could have realized that that would have been a problem. But the person responsible said, hey, that's my problem. I've been on the receiving end when every year we send a Christmas card to everybody that is a relationship of us, basically, in the world. And these Christmas cards go everywhere. They go to high generals, they go to our royal family, et cetera, et cetera. And this year, they picked maybe a picture of the Christmas card that was, let's call it remotely inappropriate, nothing racist, but maybe some skin was shown where it shouldn't have been shown. And by accident, this Christmas card went out to everybody on the mailing list, including our royal family. That they basically, the general that is in charge of the royal household, basically mailed back to our base commander, like, okay, is this appropriate to send us as a Christmas card to the king and queen? Talking about shit rolling downhill fast, that went really fast, and people wanted the names of the responsible lieutenants, and I said, well, I'm not going to give you the names, you know, I'm the commander, eventually I'm responsible, this thing went by me, I never realized who they were mailing it to, but I'm definitely not going to, if you're going to punish somebody, punish me. And then afterwards, you know, I got a lot of crap for it, and then, you know, after that stopped, I definitely handed out my shit to my subordinates, say, are you guys frigging insane for doing this? You know, I mean, you know,
yeah,
who you send this to, you need to keep thinking as well. But I never sidestepped and let them being splattered by the shit that came from very high levels. You know, you as a commander need to own up, take responsibility and say, I should have caught that and that's all on me. And then I definitely handed out my amount of punishment after that. But like I said, you should be the shit screen.
That's a great example, by the way. Did it feel good to you when you did that? In other words, you stepped in front of your team and
yes,
created a barrier and said...
It would have been a lot easier to sidestep it, but no, it felt really good. And yeah. I did not enjoy the amount of grief I got, obviously, but it doesn't matter. It's all about the team and the loyalty I got back from that squadron. I can't express in words, you know, how people repay yeah. you for that and blindly will follow you wherever you go. And if you then say, we're going to turn right here, everybody goes and turns right because they know they can trust you. And that is so much more important than sidestepping shit.
That is, again, very powerful because that's a lesson that we can apply anywhere in life, in business,
yeah,
right? It's taking responsibility in particular to protect your team. And it takes some courage, but like you said, and that's why I asked, it felt really good when you did that, right? There's no regret. There's,
and it's tie nuts.
May have taken a little bit of time. No, I understand. But let's say right now it feels good that you did that. You feel good.
Yeah, now it feels even better. But even then, that reward came a lot faster than I thought.
Yeah. Well, we're moving quickly through these questions because we are already here at lesson number 10. It's not a question, by the way. It's a lesson. Keep your people's lives stable. And I think especially coming from you in your field, again, that is very, very important because there is, I'm sure, a lot of emotion, a lot of stuff happening with people. To keep your people's lives stable, how do you do that?
By being honest, by sharing information. I wouldn't necessarily say as it comes to you, because you need to figure out what's going on as well and create a stable picture. But as you gain situational awareness about the situation that's going on, you want to start informing your team at the earliest possible convenience, creating stability. You know, if I already know that we're going to deploy to a foreign country to fight a war or something, and at some point I need to start informing my people so they can inform their families and not just wait till the last moment to inform them about stuff like that. And that's what I mean with that, keeping people's lives stable. And I think that's if you relate to a corporate world, it's like when you know layoffs are coming, you can't sit on that information forever, you know, and wait till the last moment so you have the least amount of pain as a boss to deal with, because it's just the shortest time you have to deal with it, because you're not doing your people any favors that way. And again, it creates distrust that you will not gain a lot of respect from the people that stay behind. I think it's very important, again, for that team building to let people know what's going on so they can also help you. It's not just being a responsible leader, but also having the team help you. If I inform my team early on what's going on, they can start thinking with me. They can come up with possible solutions that I have not thought about, and that way we can work to a better solution, and therefore, again, being more effective as a team.
It creates a legacy, right?
All of these 10 lessons, if you do them, and sometimes they're hard, they create a legacy. And legacy is not just that they will say like, oh, that guy was a really great leader. No, it creates an example. It creates followers. Leaders create leaders. And that legacy will last more than a lifetime if you do it right. Long after you're forgotten, people will do these things, and it will all be your doing as a leader.
I really hope that in future years, let's say, that there will be opportunities for you to be speaking to people, transferring your lessons learned to audiences, because it is very unique what you're doing. But these lessons apply to life in general. And clearly you have the experience, and I think it's fair to say you have the legacy to be a very helpful resource in future years as well. But I'm also curious, Nikki, that in all the lessons that you have learned, and again, in very, very challenging situations in multiple war zones, let's be honest, right? These were not just flyovers. These were very heavy duty situations. I read the book Mission F-16, and I really hope it will become available in English as well and in other languages, because it's very powerful to learn the details of your work and, of course, your colleagues and the commitment, as you said before, to, in this case, the country of the Netherlands, but in an alliance with the United States.
Yeah, these stories you can find anywhere in the military, in our profession. This is just a story about Dutch fighter pilots in combat. But there's lots of books that you can read history-wise, and there are stories being written as we speak here on Zoom. Somewhere in the world.
Well, I was just thinking perhaps we can add a lesson number 11 as far as modesty, because I hear that in you very clearly. You're a modest individual. But I also, Nikki, want to ask you that with all the lessons that you have learned, are there any lessons that you have unlearned?
Well, there's lots of habits I've unlearned, and let's call it lessons, and they turn into these 10 lessons, I guess. If I would think there would be even more lessons, but Like I said, I was not the greatest listener in my early parts of my career, and I don't think any fighter pilot is the best listener to start with, especially if they're young and aggressive, as they should be. They should have self-confidence from the very, very start, and that makes them really bad listeners, I guess, because they need to believe in what they think is right, and that's not always the case, obviously. So that's definitely one of the lessons that I've unlearned, that I always thought I was right, which I definitely believed in the beginning, and not listening, just transmitting is more important than listening. I don't think I ever thought that, but I definitely practiced that. So yeah, there's tons of stuff that I unlearned, but it's not necessarily lessons, because lessons are lessons, you know, hopefully they're always true. They're
good points.
They're timeless. But there's definitely things that I've unlearned. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not always easy, because in your profession, especially, you have to be determined. You have to be highly focused. But yes, to hear from you again, with so many years of experience and as a leader, to say, I'm not always right, and I need to improve my listening, or I need to.
Yes. Which is a fine line in our profession. You know, I can also never go. I mean, I still need to have that self-confidence. I still need to be able to take decisions right away. Yep. And not keep doubting decisions and all of that. So you do have to believe you're right, because split-second decisions matter. But we train people to make the right decisions in really short periods of time. We give them the tools. We give them the techniques on how to do that. And we create a certain amount of self-confidence by training, by lots and lots and lots of training. So they don't have to second guess themselves anymore in combat. So it does come with, even for the younger pilots, it does come with experience and knowledge-based decisions.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. It has been very helpful and unique perspective, again, as a pilot, fighter pilot, as a leader in so many different situations. So I really appreciate that you joined our podcast today. So I want to thank you again and thank you for your service. It's truly an honor to have you.
My pleasure, and thanks for the opportunity to write down these 10 lessons that I never really, really thought about myself until you forced me to put them on paper. It's been educational for me as well to really think, like, what are the things that matter truly?
Great point. Thank you for that. And with that, you've been listening to the international podcast 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, produced by Robert Hossery and sponsored by the Professional Development Forum. PDF provides webinars, social media discussions, podcasts, and parties. You can find more information about PDF at professionaldevelopmentforum.org. For more information about our podcast series, please visit 10lessonslearned.com. Thank you, and stay safe.